Welcome to Outstanding Lives Radio. This is Sharon Love, and today we're talking with Michelle E. Brown. Michelle Brown actually escaped death threats by her father and homelessness as a youth to become one of the nation's most fearless activists who has spoken out at the White House to brief Obama's advisors on LGBT issues. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Sharon. How are you?
I'm great. So really great to have you on the show. I'm very excited to hear your story. Can you tell me a little bit about your youth?
Well, I'm a middle child, and people say that says a lot, but I don't know. And, you know, I grew up feeling different and knowing that I was different, besides actually being different. We were African-American, but we went to Catholic school where there were very few, and we lived in a neighborhood where we were the only ones. And so there's always this difference of being the racial difference. But then there was always that difference within myself where I knew I wasn't going to grow up and be June Cleaver. I wasn't going to be the wife next door. That I wasn't sure what it was, but I knew I was different. And I think as I got older in my teens, I began to act out on that, as they would say. I explored my sexuality. I wanted to enter relationships. I hung out with the girls. You know, I just wanted to be them. And I think that my father, who was reasonably strict, and although we were raised Catholic, he came from a strict Baptist background. All of this was just like, just too much for him. It was like, you need to do this, and you will do that, and you should go to the prom with this. And I mean, I can't even recall him once bringing somebody's son for me to go to a dance with. But I needed to be me. And so, you know, what he called me, you know, just being defiant, was really my expressing myself, being it, up to the point where I wanted to change my appearance to look for more radical and be more open with my relationships and where I was heading. And my father at one point had worked with the, well, he did up until he retired, with the police department, and someone had seen me and out, as he would say, being a pervert. And the next morning, I got up and I was put on my new persona, and I was getting ready to go out, and it just started into this huge argument, like, why do you defy me? Why can't you do right? I'm not going to have a pervert under my roof. And it escalated from screaming at me to pushing, hitting at me, until finally, I mean, it was just like over the top to where it was like he'd see me dead before he'd see me be a pervert. And he went and got, actually, his shotgun. And, you know, and at that point, I'd been hit and stuff. I was just sort of cowering in a corner. But he came down with the shotgun and was about to shoot me. I mean, he had pulled it back where it makes a little click noise.
Oh,
and at that point, my mother, who has, I would say that, has always put it, but she was submissive, she said, now that's enough. And I just grabbed a sweater, I believe, and I headed out that door running as fast as I can. And I just continued to run till I ran out of energy. And called
a lot of energy.
I mean, really. I mean, I think it was adrenaline and energy. I mean, I just ran until I ran out of energy, and I had on me, like, maybe a pocket full of change and a bus card and the clothes on my back. And after I got to a certain point, I called a friend of mine from school who to this day will tell you she can still remember me calling and being almost, you know, she couldn't understand me because I was going like, and I went over there. And that began several months of going from pillar to post.
Wow, that's amazing. And then somehow you managed to get out of that and go on to become an activist, starting to build playgrounds and vacant lots and things like that. And when was that?
Well, you know,
for you.
Well, you know, part of it, I went from pillar to post, and I felt like really, really bad. And at a certain point, like, there was no place in the world for me. And so I took a bottle of aspirin and some Southern Comfort, planning to end it all because, you know, something had to be better for this than this. And I woke up the next morning with a terrible headache. And I said, okay, well, I'm still here, so now what?
I guess it's meant to be.
Okay, I did my best, and I'm still here, so now what should I do? And often if you find family, that's one of the great things of being in our community, is that you find family. And I found family, a woman who really sort of took me in, but she was very active in the community. And I can recall going with her when she was trying to get people to register to vote, pass out flyers, and then she introduced me to a lot of other people. And it wasn't an issue about my sexuality. It was an issue about me standing up and being who I am, because clearly since I hadn't gone with the Aspen and Southern Comfort, I had something to give. And I constantly said that you have something to give back. So.
Oh, and how did you meet that woman?
How did I meet her? There was a place where I had a part-time job, and she had worked there, and, you know, I didn't last that long because I was still unusual, being my unique self, and, you know, she was like, you know, if ever you need some help, you know, you can call me, you can come by my house, and at a low point, you know what, I took her up on it, and she just welcomed me in. I mean, it was like, you know, yeah. You know, so, and cleaned me up, taught me a lot about style, but really about being outstanding, an outstanding person. Because she said, if you're outstanding and do the best that you can, the rest will fall in place. Just be the best you that you can.
Right.
And part of the best you was also learning from the things that had happened to me to make it a better place for somebody else.
Wow.
So
was she the one who inspired you to go on and start to clean up vacant lots and build playgrounds and get the community involved and things like that?
She was one of a group of elder women, who I think I always refer to as my angels, who they said, you know, we can do better than this. You know, we have all what we need. And so we started working with young people who were younger than me. You know, they were like my parents' age, and they were kids like who were younger than me. And I live in Detroit, and there's a lot of vacant lots that were filled with trash and stuff. And a lot of these kids came from those neighborhoods, and they sort of felt, I'm a throwaway kid. You know, nobody cares. Look at where I live. So we started doing things like planting gardens. But then we had a huge lot. I'll never forget the name of the street. It's Beneteau. And it was filled with trash and everything. So we went there, and much like when I ran away from home, we didn't have a whole lot with us. But we went and started to talk to the neighbors and say, you know, we want to make this, you know, a playground, you know, with kids and everyone. It will be a sense of community. And we had been around in another neighborhood before then to where there had been a playground that was locked. And it was a church playground, and it was like, you know, well, this would be nice to have in our neighborhood, but it's locked. And it's like, well, why do you have it locked? Well, and their excuse was, because so it was only their kind, their people who had access to it. Forget about everybody else outside the playground. You know, it was tough. And like from that horrible example of a playground, a place where you should go and be having fun and be a part of a community, we went to this lot and said, we can do better than that. And so that's what we did. We went around, we worked, we did it. And in the process, let the people know who you are. You know, like, no, I'm not somebody special. I'm someone from the neighborhood just like you, but I care about it. And if it came up, you know, I didn't say, well, you know, I tried to go stealth mode and say, well, I'm just a community activist. Yes, I happen to have a girlfriend. This is who I love, and I'm not trying to recruit, but I am of this community. So we did that work because, you know, we can change hearts and minds by being outstanding. Mm-hmm. And so we did that for several summers, you know. And
your girlfriend help out with the playground as well sometimes?
Or? Yes, she did.
Nice.
And in fact, which was funny because after that experience, she's an ex-girlfriend now, but she went on and became a minister. And, you know, because
wow.
she just sort of felt what she was hearing coming out of churches, her church in particular, because if we went to her church, we had to be like just two friends sitting there. But she said, you know, I can do better. I should do it. So she became a minister, and she works in Maryland in a poor neighborhood, but she's out and she's doing it. So, I mean, you never know what it's going to do, but I think that was a profound experience that really touched in that way both of us and helped us express ourselves even more in our lives.
And I love how that example of you contributing to the community then came back to you later. Because weren't you at a rally or something, or you were speaking somewhere, right, for equal rights, marriage rights?
Yeah, in Michigan we had on the ballot an amendment to ban gay marriage and say that marriage is only between a man and a woman, the typical bad language. And I had taken that on to go. And one of the things that I have found is you just start to, as you feel better about yourself and you start to do it, you just feel fearless. And there's certain things that are fundamental rights that I am just fearless about, and I'm going to go wherever. And we had gone in, and I was speaking with this woman who was also on the panel. In fact, there's three other people on the panel who were very religious and basically very much against it. And they used all the biblical references to tell me how it had to be Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. I think I was at one point called an abomination, and one point invited to the church because they were sure if they prayed for me, you know, they could straighten me out. But we just couldn't have this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so we were taking questions from the audience. And, you know, I mean, a person who was with me, they said, you know, you were taking a lot of blows. And I was. And it was like, okay, well, what can I say? And I couldn't think of what I could say, you know. But then when...
There were just people there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't think of what I could say because I had tried mentioning, because I went to Catholic school, I knew the Bible, and I said something, and they told me, well, even Satan can read the Bible. So, you know, it's like, what do I say?
Wow.
You know, I mean, you know, what do you do? But I knew I couldn't leave there without at least somehow getting this group of people to realize that me being able to marry the person I love was not a bad thing. It was good. It was good for the community. And about that time, a woman stood up, and she said, you know, I don't know about that gay thing. She said, but she came in my neighborhood and helped turn a lot into a playground, and it helped make our neighborhood better. So if she can do that about my community, I don't have a problem with her getting married. And it was like, she said everything I could have said, but couldn't, you know. And it was really, and it also affirmed what I knew in my core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
as a person.
Mm-hmm. And so, and it seemed like after that, the debate took a kinder tone. Everybody didn't come up and say, hey, we're okay about it, but it took a kinder turn. I wasn't, you know, Rosemary's baby anymore, and no one else called me an abomination. We just sort of talked about it, and we got into the real things, you know, like about the legality of it and the legal rights that marriage allowed you to have. So, I mean, but that's something I couldn't have done. But how did I know that back then when I'm using a shovel to dig a hole to put in a swing set, that later on I was making a hole in someone's heart that was filled with compassion for me as a lesbian?
Exactly. Everything that you do with love has a very profound ripple effect, and we never know who that might reach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice that it came back to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
So then you kept at this and ended up in the White House. I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, like I said, I started at a local level, went on to a state level, and, you know, I think that politics that part of it sort of got in my blood. And so I started to do things with a couple of national organizations. And I joined the board of the National Black Justice Coalition, which is a primarily African-American gay organization. And, you know, usually people of color who are gay, we don't get that spotlight. We know that we have it. But through that and through lobbying and through talking, ended up, first of all, getting the tour. You know, oh, well, why don't you guys come through? And we went and did the tour and everything. But each time we went, like, well, it's great that we got to see the White House, but we have something to say. And so within, I'd say about 4 months, we got another invitation back to the White House, this time on the West End. The East End, anybody can go through the tour, but the West End, that's where the action is. As I say, POTUS is in the house, and POTUS means President of the United States. And so we walked through the West End and saw where the Oval Office and actually where President Obama came in and worked. And then we sat down. He is out of town, but while we were there, he came back. He came through and gave us like a quick greeting, very polite, very nice. You know, hi, thank you for coming, we want to hear about it. And then he said, and then to back it up, he said, and tomorrow I want you to have a briefing with my top advisors. And so the next day we were with the top advisors and everything, housing, education, health and human services. And it was interesting that as they were talking, and they were trying to tell us, well, you know, we want you to know the president is all for gay people. You know, you see how he was and everything. And so they went through and tried to tell us everything, all the things that they were all working on and what the other things. But at the end, you know, I said, well, you know, I also want to let you know that I'm also a woman. And I'm also African-American. And I walk through those worlds, too. So don't just think of me that my only issue is gay marriage. Although I can tell you why my issue is gay marriage. Just don't think about me that my issue is, you know, anti-bullying, because it's bigger than that. And after that, since then I had a second visit, another briefing to sit down and talk with them, spend more time in the presence of the president. And so it's been really inspiring. I think that up to the point where just recently, one of his policy advisors on housing came to Detroit and talked about elder LGBT communities' issues around housing and the discrimination that LGBT people do. So I have a line now to that. I know that when there's something that I want them to hear, I can contact the White House and I get a response. And I'm not just, you know, another rabble rouser. I'm moving the movement forward by being my outstanding self. I'm not just going in and being happy to have a picture taken and get my hand shaken, but to go in there and say, I have something to say, and you need to hear this.
And they're learning to listen, and it's about time. I am so glad to hear that, and looking forward. I would love to see you elected to the White House someday. And if I could vote, if I was an American, I would absolutely vote for you. But
well,
if you want to move to my country, you're more than welcome to, too. I'd love to see you. I'd love to see you elected, maybe even to the United Nations. It would be fantastic.
Well, so, you know, that's the next place, because you know what, our rights. Yes, the beauty of the internet is that you're more involved and understand what's happening to LGBT people around the world, and it can't just be okay in one place. And we can't just be silent when we know that people in other countries are being, you know, even stoned and killed and sent to schools because they're showing gay tendencies. You know, we just can't. So today, United States, I started Detroit, I did Michigan, I did United States, next the world.
Right on. And the world is your playground.
Yes, very.
Well, Michelle Brown, it has been absolutely fantastic having you on the show. I really, really enjoyed your story. It's so inspiring. Thank you so much. I'd love to have you on again. And I really do find you are outstanding.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad that you provided a point, a place where we can stand up and say that we live outstanding lives.
Thanks a million, Michelle. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.